It's time for Windows Weekly. Guess what? Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are not in Las Vegas. They're here with us to talk about the latest news from Las Vegas, the latest news from Microsoft. 200 million? We'll explain what that number means and a whole lot more. Windows Weekly is next. Catty Monkey Copy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 447, recorded Wednesday, January 6th, 2016. Catty Monkey Copy. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/Windows to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/Windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or a beautiful website for your portfolio, your blog, your business, your online store. Enter offer code Windows and you'll get 10% off at purchase. That's Squarespace. Build it beautiful. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And I note that our two esteemed pundits, Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com, Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com, are at home. They are not in Las Vegas for the massive Consumer Electronics Show.
You know what I had to do to get out of this one, Leo?
This has now become the annual tradition of tech pundits, senior tech pundits, exclaiming, "Thank God I don't have to go to Vegas this year." Yeah. And then
anyone who says they like going to CES has something wrong with them.
And I don't, I'm looking at all the reports back, and it really feels like every year it's gotten more so because of the internet, because trade shows don't matter as much anymore. It feels like chaff. You know,
they also don't like the forced excitement. You know, this year's Samsung Ultrabooks are like 0.001 millimeters thinner than last year. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it just doesn't seem
much to talk about.
Yeah. My biggest problem with CES, not counting when you go there and it's awful, is that most of the stuff people are talking about today is not happening today.
Right.
It's not true universally. I mean, we see some of the computers are coming out this month or next month or March, whatever, but... You know, historically with CS, with a lot, especially with a lot of real consumer electronic-y stuff, we're talking about things that may or may not hit it to market for months, you know?
If ever.
Yeah. If ever. I think a lot of times it's just, they're trial balloons. They're not intended to be real products. We're just saying, well, what would you think if we made a television with 18K? What would you say?
I'm thinking about putting a television on the side of my van.
What do you think? Yeah, or on the side of a refrigerator.
With a tablet. Yeah.
Every year they do that. Every year for the last 10 years they've put out, or Samsung or some, or their ilk have put out a refrigerator with a screen and a computer on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never. Does it go anywhere?
No.
No one wants that.
I don't get it.
No one wants that. Mm-mm.
Well, so I'm not there. Mary Jo, I don't know. Have you ever been to CES? You don't like these kind of things.
I have been to CES. Yep.
CES is your nightmare scenario. It's Vegas, huge crowds
of
people.
It's like everything I hate.
Well, that's what I like.
Yeah, it's all in one place.
It's like a party. Yeah. It's fun.
There's a reason that The Stand ended in Las Vegas with a nuclear explosion. You know?
Plus, that's right. I think I'm still wounded from all the years I had to go to Comdex. I just never recovered from that.
Right.
And I just could never get past that.
There hasn't, so Comdex really was much more of a PC show. It was Dealers Expo. Now it's a consumer electronics show.
Yeah.
CES, they announce new PCs there, but I don't really ever get the sense that there's any, that is a
problem
place.
Is it's everything, right? It's like the huge, aircraft carrier sized room that's full of open hatchbacks with neon speakers pumping stuff out of them. And, there's a lot of weirdness at CES that, like you said, chaff. I think chaff was maybe the best way to describe it.
Is there a Comdex replacement though out there? I think people don't need these shows anymore, do they?
No.
No, we don't really have to explain to people why computers are important anymore.
Well, and you can get everything you need to know over the internet.
Right. Yeah.
And company that's smart wants to share the stage with a bunch of companies. Look at Microsoft
and Apple. They don't do anything at CES anymore, yeah. Right?
That was the beginning of the end, wasn't it?
They want to have their own events where they can orchestrate the whole thing, and it's all about them.
Right.
Who would?
Why wouldn't they?
Yep.
Marsha.
It's all about you.
Yep.
All right. Well, there is a big story this week, and we kind of had the tease on our last show. By the way, Chris Capicella, great, love him, and it was nice to have him on the show. And I think we got a lot of attention for it, rightly so, because that was a scoop, big interview. And one of the things he said is, "We will have another number." of activations, and they did.
We have a number.
It's a big number.
Yeah, it is a big number.
But as I saw you tweet,
200 million
new Windows 10 users, and then they have,
to say it like this: 200 million.
But they have to, then they have to muck it up because, as you tweeted, that includes Xbox One updates.
But that's fair, right? I mean, when was the last time they announced a figure, Mary Jo? Do you remember? Maybe August or September?
Yeah, in the fall, we had 110 million, right?
Oh, 110 million. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that was 4 months
presumably
ago.
Presumably, that figure or whatever other figure they might have provided would have been just PCs, because at that time,
there was no other upgrade.
That's all that Windows 10 was available on. But we know
PCs and tablets. That's all it was.
Right. So, I mean, they've been talking about Internet of Things devices. There are phones obviously coming now. There's Xbox One. I mean, these things have to get...
So are they including Raspberry Pis in this number?
Yeah, I would think they are, because that is a Windows 10 device. Right. Or can be, right?
And by the way, these are active devices, in other words. That's the number.
Yeah, this isn't copies of Windows 10 going out in boxes or something. It's these things are out in the world and they're being used. Right. Presumably. I mean, active is an interesting word. It's not activated like, you know, Google says about phones. It's not something you can measure very easily in terms of unit sales, right? Because a lot of stuff that people can download Windows 10 100 times individually. But it's, I guess, active devices.
How many Xbox Ones are out there, though? I mean, that's not a mess.
So the actual technical definition, I got them to tell me what this active number is. It's the number of Windows 10 devices that have been active in the last 28 days. That's what that number is.
Oh, that's a lot then.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it's not just somebody who installed it and then took it off.
It's actual usage.
People using Windows 10.
Oh. By the way, we complain a lot about they're kind of squishy numbers, especially these days when they're hiding things and their new business groups. This is a good number, right? This is a meaningful number.
Yeah.
It's a real number.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is related to this was a couple of days before they announced this, NetApplications had their usage share statistics for PCs. Worked out, if you accept Microsoft's figure of 1.5 billion PCs in the world, but 165 million were running Windows 10. And so you think, well, what's the delta between that and this 200 million figure? Do these things not line up? And I actually think that delta is the non-PC devices. I think it's Xboxes, phones, IoT devices, whatever.
Yeah. I can tell you what one source told me, and I can't verify this, but I asked more about what's that 200 million number. And they said around 180 million PCs, around 18 million Xbox Ones and about a million plus Windows 10 phones, which mean the 950, 950 XL and the 550.
Interesting.
So it's still a big number for PCs. I mean, put it into perspective. I mean, it's less than
it is.
XP.
Yeah. Mostly PCs. Yep. Mostly PCs.
PlayStation, I think they just came up with the figure was like 36 million PlayStation 4s. Right. There's a kind of a feeling. Microsoft is not releasing numbers for Xbox One for obvious reasons, but they're basically being outsold by about 2-1.
Right, about half.
So that 18 million figure lines up with that very nicely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and in terms of other adoption rates for previous versions of Windows, This has got to be the biggest, yes, the fastest.
Well, by far. It's also hard to compare, though, too, because with Windows 7, they used to give you the number of licenses sold to the channel. Yeah. So they never gave us the number of
But you understand that makes it even better, right? because these are actual usage numbers.
This is more like the Android numbers that Google puts out.
Yeah, the activated numbers. During the Windows 7 timeframe, they did this artificially, but they artificially worked it so that 20 million new units every month for Windows 7. That was the run rate, you know. And of course, with Windows 8, we kind of compared whatever they said about Windows 8. They stopped doing it very quickly, but for a short while there, we could compare the launch of Windows 8 to the launch of Windows 7 and then the run rate of Windows 8 to that of Windows 7. And obviously, that didn't go very well. This, if you go back to July 29th or whatever that day it was, you know, August through January 1st, you basically get over 30 million units per month. It's not units, right? It's usage, but. Like Mary Jo said, you're comparing apples to oranges in a way, but
that's
the difference
three
is actually,
times what it was. It used to be 10 million, right? Every month.
20 million.
Okay. So it's 50% better than previous.
Yeah. Is that right? Actually, I apologize. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Actually, the figure is 40 million. So
okay,
it's actually double.
Good. Yeah.
But it's more than double because those Windows 7 unit sales or license sales were not computers coming online and being used in the world right away.
They were stores.
So not a lot of them were, you know, a lot of them weren't. So it's better than double Windows 7. And Windows 7 is widely regarded as the most successful version of Windows ever.
Right.
You know,
it's also a little tricky to compare because Windows 10 is free mostly right now at this point. Right.
So, yes.
So what?
Windows 7 is
no, but see, I actually think that also speaks to the success of Windows 10 because the reason people didn't upgrade to Windows before wasn't just the cost. It was because it was very difficult and was error-prone and unreliable. Mm. And that's this is something they put out to the general public. In fact, we've accused them of being too aggressive about it. And they obviously feel that technically speaking, it's such an easy process that almost anyone can do it. And they've been successfully doing it by and large. Now, I'm going to hear from everyone who hasn't successfully installed Windows 10, but because that's how the internet works. But I think it's an important point to make that it is it's a different world, you know, of course. But it's also a world where the importance of the PC is sort of declined, that these other devices are taking off and they're trying to sell or push, push Windows 10 in this world, and they're doing it in a different way. And I, you know, if you had said when Windows 7 launched that one day Windows will be free, I'm not sure we would have seen that day coming, you know, at least not this quickly. I don't know.
Remember,
it's obviously an overly.
Okay, now maybe my memory is faulty. A couple of years ago, we covered this rumor that they would be giving away Windows. We talked about it. Maybe it was you said wishfully, oh, they should give away Windows.
I've always thought that, when Apple started doing this, because Apple, I think we should give credit on the desktop, Apple was really the first to kind of do this. And I'm sure they were influenced by what they saw in the mobile space, right? But Apple started some years ago with Mac OS X, giving that away as a free upgrade to people already had Macs, you know, which would be everybody, right? You sort of see that and you realize, you know, this is actually a really smart move. And it's smarter, I think, even with Windows because of the install base, the size of it. And the arguments like Chris Capicella made a couple of weeks ago where he was talking about the dangers of being on an out-of-date PC platform, especially Windows XP, and how much better it is for Microsoft if everybody's on the same platform. It's come together nicely, but, well, depending on who you talk to, it hasn't come together nicely, but it's come together. Let's say it's come together. I don't know. They're one-fifth of their way to the goal. And remember, it's been about half a year, not even, and they're talking about hitting a billion. What was this time frame? 2 to 3 years, right?
2018. By 2018.
Well, okay, they're fifth of the way there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good. Right. And for, I remember
when they announced that number, I remember asking somebody, I can't remember who, I said, what do you expect the majority of devices will be when you're saying 1 billion? And they said PCs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. There's a 1.5 billion install base, right? I mean, if the PC market contracted by 50% and everyone was eventually on Windows 10, which is certainly plausible, right? Especially if they don't upgrade to Windows 11 or whatever. That's a billion right there.
Yep. The other couple of numbers that were in that post that I thought were interesting, they also gave a number of how many of the 200 million are enterprise and education, I think it was.
Yep.
Looking for that. Right. 22 million of those 200 million are on devices run by enterprise and education customers.
That's a tough one, right? Because they don't usually give that number. Right. And I think what they're trying to show is that, unlike with previous versions of Windows, those typically slow moving environments are also moving forward with the new system. But we have nothing to compare that to.
Yeah. 76% of enterprise customers, of Microsoft's total base of enterprise customers, are in, quote, active pilots of Windows 10. So an active pilot could mean one computer.
Yeah, right.
know what that means, but.
When Windows 8 launched, I did a series of webinars for Dell, and I remember there were similar figures for Windows 8 at that time. I mean, what happens a lot of times is that they evaluate and then they say, yeah, we're not doing this. or we'll do this later on, or we'll do this in a more phased way.
Yeah. But still, you're right. The whole purpose of dropping those numbers is to say, you see, they're not waiting around for the non-existent Service Pack 1 in this case, but they're actually going forward now, earlier than they thought. And a lot of people thought enterprises would stick with Windows 7 till 2020, you know, when support finally ends. But
so your sense is enterprises are adopting?
They're at least kicking the tires way earlier than they did with 8. Many never even touched 8. And with Windows 7, a lot of them were kind of reticent at the beginning. They were still on XP and kind of like, 7's a good operating system, but we're going to take our time. So the implication is people are more interested in going to this earlier, or at least looking at it earlier.
Yeah. It's hard to say on the business side. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where these guys move forward quickly. And why would they?
No. You know? Right.
So unqualified success. Yes.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we didn't touch on it too much with Chris Capicella, but over the past few months, we've talked about a lot. There are a lot of controversial issues around Windows 10. Some of them are just FUD, and some of them are real, you know, and these are things Microsoft needs to clear up. And so nothing in life is truly unqualified. But as far as the kind of run rate we've seen with Windows 10, with all the caveats that we've mentioned, you know, it's free and so on and so forth. To me, this has been incredibly successful. And what a welcome change, you know, from Windows 8, and what a disaster that really was.
Yeah.
So I think it's great, you know.
There were, just to throw a little cold water on here, that's my job.
Let me get my umbrella.
you know, there were some people who were concerned by the blog post where Microsoft announced this, where they talked about a lot of the in-depth statistics that they had on what people were doing who had Windows 10, like how many hours of games they were streaming and how many photos they had saved. And I've seen a couple of stories of people saying, well, this proves it. They're like snooping on you, and that's that.
Yep.
This is telemetry, and you can not completely turn it off, but you can definitely adjust your settings if you don't want Microsoft to know some of this. Also, we should talk about this being anonymized data. They don't know, like, I have X number of photos and my name is blah, 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 supposedly. Right.
So people were upset about these numbers? Gosh.
Yeah. I saw a couple posts where people were like, oh, man.
But this is a continuation of that FUD stuff, right? It is. Either people completely misunderstanding what's happening and seeing, you know, privacy issues where there are none, or people in the press or blogosphere who either are privacy nuts or anti-Microsoft people, whatever it is. I don't know. Microsoft, I say this a lot, you know, Microsoft screws up a lot and we call them on it, and that's our job. And there's so much stuff to talk about. We don't have to make stuff up, you know, and a lot of this telemetry stuff is exactly what you said it is. It's not anything about personal information. It's not, you know, there were so many people, you know, playing video games over the Christmas holidays or whatever. It doesn't say, and here's the list of games Paul played, and here's the times he played them, and here's the achievement he got. And here's the people he played against. You know, it's not like that. And I think people misunderstand that kind of stuff.
How about the Windows Store?
That's a disaster.
Because really, this is all, in a way, all in service of getting a robust number of applications in the Windows Store, right? I mean, really, that's why you want to have this massive installed base. You want developers to write XAML Windows Store.
Well, since I'll have the cold water for this story, let's let Mary Jo provide a more positive spin on this, perhaps.
Mary Jo?
No, I actually am curious what Paul had to say on that one.
Oh, I see. So Microsoft,
Mary Jo,
I talked to her. I'm sorry. I didn't want to be this. Like,
Mary Jo, Paul. So, he is.
No, Microsoft, with the Windows 10 figure, I think is being very transparent in a good way. I think, like I said, I think that's a good number. The Windows Store stuff is not good. You know, this is the bad, non-transparent Microsoft. This is, we're going to talk engagement. We're going to give you percentage comparisons to what things were like a year ago or 3 years ago without telling you what the actual numbers are. You know, Apple came out with some number today. I forget the exact figure, but I want to say customers spent $1.1 billion over the last 2 weeks of the year or something buying crap through Apple Store online. You know, it's a huge economy. Microsoft has no such figure to tout. It's a very small number. Compared to Windows 8, the Windows 10 Store is probably doing pretty good. But if you're being honest with yourself and you actually use this thing over the past 3-4 years, you can also say that the Windows Store today is really not that much different than the Windows Store from Windows 8. It really isn't. If you go look at the games that are available, it's the same stupid mobile type games. There's nothing exciting going on there. The good news is that will change. That doesn't guarantee success down the road. We just saw an announcement this week. I think it was from Square Enix saying that Rise of the Tomb Raider is coming to Windows. You're going to be able to get it electronically from Amazon, from Steam, and from the Windows Store. And that game is a desktop game. It's not a Windows Store game. It's a, you know, like a Win32 whatever application. It will run on Windows 7. And so that's one of the things that's going to change this year. We're going to be able to buy real games through the store and real applications as well. And so, you know, look, they need to make this sound as good as they can make it sound. And they want to attract developers. And that's really the whole point of this. But there's no concrete number in here that we can point to and say, actually, yes, this is really good. They're just comparing. We didn't tell you how well we were doing before, but we're doing twice as well as we were before. You know, well, you weren't doing well before. You know, what's 2 times 0? Again, I can.
Mary Jo, you agree? Microsoft thinks it's a huge success. They've been very happy.
Do they?
Don't they?
Well, that's what they're saying.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I can only go by what somebody says. I can only imagine their internal conflict lying to us all.
You know, I think we're at kind of a weird point right now with the store because, like Paul's saying, it's a combination of things in the store right now. Like there's true universal apps in the store, which you can't really tell in many cases that they are universal apps, I don't think. Then you've got some other apps. You've got the old Win32 apps, which you can see in the store, but you can't actually get through the store, right? You can go click on them, but you actually go to the site of the vendor to download those apps. And that's supposed to change if they keep plans current for that bridge that they talked about with bringing Win32 apps actually into the store. But as far as I know, that hasn't happened yet. I feel like we're in early days on the store and it's pretty early to claim it's a major success. I don't know if I'd call it a complete failure, but...
Look, there are 200 million people using this thing.
Right.
It makes sense that, especially, there was some, I don't remember the number, but there was some big jump in Windows 10 usage post Black Friday, probably related to new PC sales. Mm-hmm. Likewise, there was, I think, a jump in Windows Store visits and app downloads and stuff. And, you know, it helps that Windows 10 is so popular, you know, compared to Windows 8. So people are actually using the thing. And so Windows Store is a big part of it. They're being perhaps a little overly aggressive in pushing store apps in this version as well. You can see little recommended apps in the start menu and, you know, the store tile advertises things. The store icon is in the taskbar by default. So it can only get better. You know, it's only going to be better, of course.
Well, and that's kind of how I would gloss Microsoft's bullishness is they're probably seeing signs of developers working on apps of interest in making universal apps, They're not saying today the store is everything it should be or what they want it to be. But I think what they should be looking for is some sort of sense from developers that they want to embrace this. And this is the 200 million number is a big deal. I mean, that helps a lot because developers are looking for a place to spend their time so that they can make some money.
I agree with that. Yep. And, you know, look, Build's coming up. We know this late March, early April. That's a developer show. That's going to be, I think, the next big reveal on developer stuff and including some numbers maybe for the store and so forth.
You know what's
so,
going to sell a lot of Windows 10 devices? The Oculus Rift.
new high-end computer, sure.
You need a gaming machine.
With a very specific GPU-type hardware, too.
Well, and plus, we right now there is no universal Windows Store for Xbox One. That's going to be coming.
Yes.
Right.
So there you go.
That isn't there yet. That's right. You still
and
can't get
Build would be a great time for that to happen and or be announced.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I look at this and, you know, they do this with Xbox too. Of course, because the Xbox One think about how weird this is. Xbox One in many ways is doing much better than Xbox 360 ever was. And Xbox 360 is a success. I think overall, despite all the issues and so forth. But it's getting killed by the PS4. It's such a weird thing. I mean, you want to be able to tout certain things about it, but it's a hard, you can't come out every month and say, we just got outsold by PS4 by two to one again. You know, you can't keep saying that. And they've just decided they're not going to talk those kind of hard numbers anymore with these products. And so whether you're talking about Windows Phone, actually, we do get Windows Phone sales, don't we? Lumia sales. But Xbox One, certainly, and the Windows Store, we get the soft numbers. You know, we get percentage comparisons to things that we don't know what the base was. And it's not very transparent.
Yeah. Hmm. By the way, I'm getting tons of people on Twitter telling me, do I know that Outlook.com, MSN.com, Bing.com, and Xbox Live are all down for many people?
I can tell you why they went down, by the way.
Why?
Because I went to Bing.com earlier, and I got a welcome message that I posted on Twitter. It says, "Welcome, Paul. You're now getting the best of Bing." And I thought, what was I getting before? So I posted a picture of it, and now Bing is down.
So we have to blame
I think
you?
I took down all of Microsoft.
Good work.
It's Paul's fault.
Yeah, the status page is also down, which makes it hard to know what's going on.
Maybe they're getting attacked.
We have an ask in, people. If we find out, we'll let you know.
Wow, that's not a good thing.
No. But luckily, our OneNote notes are up somehow.
But now I just went to Bing.com and it's working. Does that...
Is it? It's down for me right now.
Really?
Yep, I can't see anything.
Huh. So it's one of them things. It's not universal. You go to Outlook.com.
Cortana's down too, which is related to Bing.
Outlook launched.
It did? Oh, good. Yeah. You're having good luck.
Yeah. Okay. Cortana said there's no notebooks available. I guess that's what that means down, Outlook. Right?
I cannot get into Bing.
But also Cortana's notebooks are back. I think this has all been fixed, is what I'm guessing.
I hope so.
Oh. Yeah, because my was notebooks are now available.
They probably turned it off and turned it on.
Yeah, they shut off the internet and it's back.
I'm having trouble
printing. Yeah, Bing is back for me.
Actually, you turned Bing off and on again?
Yep. Yeah, so I can get into Office 365.
Does Microsoft have a dashboard? Apple does, where all the services
are. Yeah, it was down.
The dashboard was down.
It was Outlook status dashboard, and that is now, let's see, up or down? It's trying to be up.
That's a bet. You know, okay, here's a little tip. Your status dashboard should be on a different server.
Yeah, they've had that issue before. Okay, Outlook.com service health is trying to come up. So something happened. Someone tripped over something.
Yeah, it says, we're all good, is what it says to me.
It's just all came back up for me. Bing was definitely down.
Yeah. So that was temporary. But I'm getting
whatever
ridiculous
just happened. It was
we're
a
all good message.
Yay, good.
It's not really what I want. I want to.
I know you want to see.
I want a status
there's
board.
The Office 365. If you have Office 365, you can go into the dashboard there and see your status.
If you're an admin,
it's up.
But I'm not an admin, so.
Maybe just because we said it, it made it all come back.
Oh, no, the guy said, oh, shoot, I forgot to turn that back on.
Whoops. Whoops. Flip that
switch. Hey, Satya, hold on. Just hold that thought.
Exactly.
I got to push a button here.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
There was news at CES. There were new laptops announced.
Yeah, who cares? Let's just skip over that. Most of it's, look, thinner, lighter, blah, blah.
Well, okay, so I bought, so I ordered the Oculus Rift because it just went up for order. By the way, I'm not getting it until May. So there's more than a few people ordering it because the initial orders come in March. So,
oh, really? Because Raphael heard May as well.
Oh, maybe that's just everybody. Because it says coming in March, but maybe they meant, I don't know what they meant. Maybe we're going to start making them in March. I don't know. I get a free Oculus?
You kickstarted it.
Nice.
And I just bought one. What am I thinking? I was wondering why. Okay, so this was weird.
Okay, so.
Because yesterday I got an email from Oculus saying, as a backer, we need some information. And I thought, oh, they must have triggered this email by accident.
So that's why Raphael's getting his as well. Maybe that's why you're getting it in May, too.
No, I paid for one.
Oh, this is from the one you ordered. Oh.
I ordered a $600 Oculus. Apparently, I now have two. I suppose I could cancel one.
Sure. You have time.
Yeah, I have a few months. But the reason I brought that up is now I need to get a PC because it needs to have NVIDIA 970 or better graphics and an Intel i5 4590 or greater. Memory, you need to have. I'm just looking because they have a compatibility checker. My Dell doesn't do it. You have to have 8 gigs of RAM. And of course, you have to be running Windows 10.
Nice.
And USB 3 ports. So you need an NVIDIA GTX 970 or AMD 290 or equivalent. Do you know if our Surface Books will do that? I can't remember what's in the Surface Book.
Well, that's a good question.
I got the GPU version. That would be really shocking if my Surface Book.
Oh, right. No, there's no way. That's the GPU is not going to be up to snuff, I bet. There's no way.
So
it's not really a gaming GPU. It's not. I mean, obviously, it improves games somewhat, but that's not really the point.
So my point. I'm in the market for a new PC.
Yeah.
Having already bought two in 2015.
Sure.
And I guess it should be a desktop. Wait a minute. No, can I use it with my Xbox One? No.
I don't think so.
I don't know. All right. Well, I have to go say hello, Oculus. But I think that's going to drive some adoption of PCs, yeah?
$599. Any thoughts on the price? Too much.
$599,
and then you can't. The touch is way delayed. Yep. But you know what you get in there? An Xbox One controller in the box.
Yeah, an actual Xbox One controller.
Apparently, they made a deal with Microsoft, and you get Eve, Valkyrie, and Lucky's Tale.
Yeah, right. The games. Yeah.
So now, how much would you pay?
Does it come with Dramamine?
Yeah.
I got to get a new PC.
Yep.
Son of a...
Dude, you're getting a Dell.
I think so. Dude. What happened to that guy? Didn't he like get arrested for...
I think he did get arrested. Yeah. Drugs.
Dude. I'm high as a kite. What else?
We should talk about this Windows Embedded thing. I think is
take a break.
Very,
let's say,
very
let's
interesting.
Let's take a break,
thing.
And then we'll talk about the very, very interesting.
And I don't know why I called it Windows Embedded, because that's not what it is.
IoT, Windows for IoT?
No, it's not even that.
Well. Something else. Okay, folks, we're going to surprise you. But first, a word from Wealthfront.com. Wealthfront is an amazing idea, and we all should be saving for our long-term future, right? We all you put money aside for retirement, right? You should have a nest egg, for emergencies. You should probably you may be saving up to get a down payment for a house or college for your kids or baby. There's all sorts of reasons you might have long-term. And this is the key: long-term savings. But putting it in a savings account, despite the name, is probably not the best thing to do with your money. I was so happy. I got a check for 47 cents from my bank for the savings account. That is not going to put the kids through college. You need to invest. But the problem with investing is, are you going to manage this? maybe if you have the skill, but even if you don't have, even if you do have the skill, are you going to spend the time it requires to keep an keep this growing as fast as possible? Maybe you're going to hire an investment advisor. A lot of people do that. And pay 1 to 3%, literally 3% of the money they make, of the money in under management, plus hidden fees for transactions and charges every year. That means you have to make 3% more, and that ain't easy. Let me tell you about Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a great idea. The folks at Wealthfront, it's one of those great internet startups that we talk about all the time, got together with some of the biggest minds, the best, smartest people in investing, people like Burton Malkiel, who wrote A Random Walk Down Wall Street, and Charles D. Ellis, who wrote Winning the Loser's Game. They got more than 16 investment books. They got more than 200 years of investment experience in the Wealthfront advisors. And what they've done is they've put together software to maximize your investment. And all you have to do is go to Wealthfront.com and see, first of all, how well your investment would do. But second of all, they're doing things like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing. Ask your high-priced investment advisor, do you rebalance every day? Are you always looking at ways to lower my tax bill and increase my after-tax returns? Are you doing that? Wealthfront does, and they do it not for 1, 2, or 3%, but for 1/4 of 1%. 1/4 of 1% a year. Less than $5 a month with a $30,000 account, and there are no additional charges, no hidden transaction fees. No wonder they've grown 20 times in the last 2 years. $2.6 billion in management. I want you to go to wealthfront.com/windows and read about it. Understand what they're doing. I want you to go into this with completely wide open eyes. Although you'll see, I think you'll be very impressed with the people who put this together and their philosophies. And then you can get started for as little as $500. That's the minimum investment. And they're going to do a nice thing for people who go there as Twit listeners. Wealthfront.com/windows. Your first $15,000 are managed entirely free of charge for life. You can see what they're doing. Actually, if you go there right now at wealthfront.com/windows, you can get a free portfolio based. You'll answer some questions about your time frame, your risk aversion. Based on that, they'll just give you, here you go, here's a free portfolio. You can see how they would invest. Really is fascinating. Wealthfront.com/windows. I invite you to try it. Read about it. Try it. The nice thing is you can set it and forget it. At a low cost, you can get the best investment planning, and you just don't have to think about it anymore until you retire, and then you'll be glad. You'll say, that Leo, he's long gone. He's been dead for 50 years, but I owe him one. Buy me a beer in heaven.
Untapped check-in.
I'm drinking Angel's Brew. or something else. You never know. I've had a checkered past. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Microsoft. We're talking about Windows. We're talking about Windows Embedded. No. What not? No.
No, that never happened, Leo. We're going to pretend that never happened.
So Ford at CES, Ford was for a long time using Microsoft Car. They announced that their next Ford Sync 3, which will come out in the 2017 models later this year, will support Android Car and CarPlay, Apple's solution. But I don't think it's Microsoft Car.
It's not Microsoft Car.
Is it QNX?
QNX, yep.
Everybody's doing that now. They're all doing the cute. You know why? Because BlackBerry, great company.
I don't think that's why. Just like I don't think it's Facebook is the reason people are buying Oculus Rift. Yeah.
So is this bad news for... does Microsoft even do Microsoft Car still? I mean, what is that?
Probably.
You know what? This is a great question. And we were talking about this on Twitter when Microsoft made their announcements about the car, all their car announcements. And I said, you know, does Windows Automotive exist anymore?
Right.
Like, is that even a thing?
Well, my Mustang.
And nobody had could
it.
Answer it.
My Mustang, 2010 Mustang,
yeah,
had a Microsoft, metal Microsoft badge on the dash.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, they were proud of that. Microsoft's inside.
Yeah.
And I loved Ford Sync. A lot of people didn't like my Ford Touch, which was what Microsoft did. I mean, Ford yeah, did to Microsoft.
Yeah. I like Sync. I've only used it in rental cars, but I
loved it.
I always thought it was pretty great.
The my Ford Touch, not so hot, but the Sync was awesome. Yeah. So, and that was the Microsoft stuff. So,
so anyway. Now it seems, because we've never had the definitive word, that that is no longer the strategy. But we think that is no longer the strategy. Putting Windows in cars seems to be done now. And instead, what Microsoft's doing is connecting cars to their cloud services. So connecting cars to Azure services, connecting cars to Office 365, you know, letting you do things like look at a PowerPoint on the dash, hopefully not the driver, hopefully the passenger.
We'd like to give you a PowerPoint about your recent encounter with local law enforcement.
So, yeah, they've kind of, I would say they've pivoted. And now instead of being about Windows in cars, they're about services in cars or connecting to services in cars.
Yep.
That fits more with them being an enterprise software and services company instead of trying to be a consumer company. It plays to their strengths, I would say, which are Azure and Office 365 and kind of goes away from the way that Apple and Google are going. Like, you don't hear Microsoft talking about self-driving cars. You don't hear them talking now about Windows and cars. So I think it's a definite strategy shift. And they've got a few partners that they announced at CES who are on board with this whole new strategy. They talked about a partnership with Nissan, Volvo, a company called IAV, which actually was demonstrating Windows 10 streaming in cars, and they also were using the Azure IoT suite in cars. So it seems like they've definitely changed the way they're approaching the car industry, but maybe it's a better way for them.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
QNX is funny. Is it not driving.
Yeah, you don't,
I'm probably the last person who should be talking about that.
Well, some of it's a little goofy, right? Like there was a, you know, The Volvo thing is about Band 2, so you can, from your band, using a Volvo tile, which really runs a Volvo app on your phone, do things like start the car, turn the heater on, that kind of stuff. Nice. It's okay. Yeah,
that's good.
And then there was even a thing where they actually, there's a video of this, where you're driving around and you get a Skype for Business phone call, and they actually connect it into the dash of the videos, like in the dashboard. And it's like, I don't think that's such a great idea, you know, unless you're not driving, I guess.
I have done video calls while driving. Seems like not a good thing.
It seems a little dangerous. But that IAV company, they seem like an integrator type company. And I think what they're doing is connecting the Microsoft backend services to the systems in cars, regardless of what they are. And I think this goes to my whole notion that Microsoft's future is the cloud stuff. And this is exactly the way they should be approaching cars, because this is where they can really add value, I think. Not so much Cortana or, you know, Office or whatever, but although that will be part of it. I really think it's the Azure stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, if we could have a little Cortana hologram up there on the dashboard, that'd be awesome.
Somebody in the chat room asks actually a good question, which is that, look, we all have smartphones with every software and they're already online. Why don't we just, that's kind of the Android and CarPlay thing is just let the car phone, smartphone.
Yeah.
Have a display in the car. That's where the smart should live, not in the car itself.
I totally agree.
Yeah, because that's updated and
getting it onto a big screen.
On the back end, the cloud, right? So if you have Cortana Analytics in the cloud,
that could also be
the way that the car manufacturers or the third party partners do things like improve safety with predictive maintenance. Predictive vehicle crash kinds of stuff. So, that's definitely what they're doing. The smarts are in the cloud and the phone, right?
Right. And as little as possible in the car, because we all know that car makers move very slowly and those things tend to be out of date very quickly. And I think the lightweight systems like CarPlay or Android Auto or whatever they call that are all fine and good, and that's okay. But most of the systems you see in cars, all the systems you're going to see in cars are not one of those things. A lot of them are going to be most of those things together with some other things. And so you have your kind of choice of interface and so forth. But those things are there so you can interact with your phone on a bigger screen, which I think is cool. Yeah. And, you know, integrated into the car system. And that's fine. That's exactly the integration point of the level of integration that we need in the car. It's good.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I agree with you. So the cloud has a lot to offer there.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's actually a perfect marriage. And then the car can be kind of dumb. It just needs to be
it needs to have an interface. Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah. It's enough.
A thin client. Good way of putting it. Yeah. I'm sure auto manufacturers would prefer that. They don't want to have to. I mean, you can't. The design cycle for a car is so slow, and then nobody upgrades.
They're delusional in their own way, right? I mean, they want to add value. They want that to be a differentiator for their vehicle and so forth.
That's what Sync was, right? That was a huge – that was why Ford bought podcast.
There aren't a lot of examples of someone reviewing a car where they say, you got to get this one because the auto entertainment system is amazing.
I disagree, Paul. I disagree. I think that was a differentiator for a lot of people.
I don't know of any that were that were particularly good, but –
Well, Ford Sync was the only one that I really particularly liked. And, look at Jeff Jarvis. Jeff Jarvis, who is searching for a new car. He needs desperately to buy a new car. And he says, I want one that'll have Android in it.
Right.
And nobody can assure me that their car will support Android car.
Right. But that's gonna change over time. You know, he needs one now, so he's out of luck.
That's the problem, right?
I think his situation, I think, is very typical. More often than Android, I think in the United States, you see people say, I have an iPhone, I want it to work in the car.
Right.
And people have different ideas about what that means, but
Bluetooth works with everything. I mean, that's not an issue. I get in my car,
but
you want Google Maps.
If you have Google Maps on your phone, you want it up on the screen.
I want a display. I want a display, and I want to be able to talk to it through the car's entertainment system. I want the button on the steering wheel to tie to Siri or Cortana or Google Now rather than, I have a lot of those features built into my high-end Audi, but because it's offline, the voice synthesis even sounds drunk.
Yeah. Unless you can go into the dealership occasionally and spend $500 on a disc that updates
so
the system
dumb.
To something. Yeah, it's so out of date.
And this is a late model, high-end Audi.
Yeah.
Running QNX, ironically. Mm-hmm. But the newer models will be, I think, much smarter to be a thin client. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And maybe, who knows, maybe you hear maps. Didn't the Germans buy them?
Yeah. The car consortium bought them, right?
I think that's true, yeah.
I want Android Audio, auto, or CarPlay, or both. I mean, ideally both.
Ideally both, and I think that I really do think that's what you're going to see is those two systems, but not constrained. There's also going to be a third thing, and the third thing is going to be the native car interface. It's going to let you do Bluetooth and all that stuff. And you know, people want USB, they want Bluetooth, they want an audio jack type thing. And increasingly, I think they're going to want the CarPlay and the Android Auto as well. Mm-hmm. And I bet most of them will have all of that stuff, or at least optionally have it.
I don't want PowerPoint. I don't want Skype for Business.
No.
Listen,
I'm sitting in traffic. I want to tinker with my presentation.
Somebody said to me on Twitter, I can't wait till I can have a PowerPoint in the car.
No,
so there are people.
Can wait. I can. Well, but remember, we're rapidly moving towards a day where you aren't actually driving.
Right.
Yeah. We're moving towards that much faster than anybody, I think.
Well, that becomes a different scenario. Then you're talking about a mini living room where you could have a big screen.
Well, that's what they're getting ready. I mean, remember, we're thinking, especially in the car world, 5 years ahead.
I don't know. How would you as a car maker feel about self-driving vehicles, you know?
Well, they don't. I'll tell you exactly because I know because I constantly bring this up to Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, and he constantly said, "Oh no, people want to drive."
Yeah,
and I said, "Come on, Alan, in the back, you got a Skunk Works." No, we know people love to drive, but now it's very obvious that Ford understands this. In fact, there was a rumor, I guess not proven untrue, but that they were going to announce at CES a deal to make cars with Google self-driving technology. This is going to happen.
That hasn't happened, has it?
No, that was a false rumor. I think
it was false.
You know who's going to? You know where it's going to happen? Uber. And your first experience in an autonomous vehicle will be a taxi, will be an Uber.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how people are going to get used to it. That you won't be. It's the same thing with the Prius. You first experienced a Prius in a cab, as a cab, a hybrid is a cab for most people. Mm. Many people still don't own hybrids, but they've probably all ridden in a Prius. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to happen in Uber. And it's going to happen in the next 5 years, believe it or not, in cities, not going to be in rural areas, but in cities. And you'll get comfortable with it. And then, but all auto manufacturers at this point are saying, okay, that's what's happening. And anything they're doing about car integration automation right now has to be with an eye towards a first step towards what would happen in an autonomous vehicle, I think.
So you say.
And don't you think Microsoft is very well aware of that?
Yeah, but I don't think they themselves, I don't think, are investing in self-driving
cars. No, I think that they've ceded that to Google and Uber.
They have. And also just said, you know what, we don't care what the vehicle, who drives the vehicle. Exactly. We just want to supply the
backup. What strategy does that sound like, Mary Jo? It's like Microsoft's mobile strategy. We don't care what phone you bring to the party.
iOS and Android, right?
Yeah, right? Same thing.
Yeah. You know what? It's very pragmatic.
It's smart.
It is.
Who made all the money in the gold rush?
I'm going to be on Twitter dealing with the guys who like have Windows Automotive, and I'm going to want to know why they keep supporting CarPlay instead of Microsoft something.
Who made all the money in
the next 5 years of my life?
Who made all the money in the gold rush? Not the gold miners. Yeah. Levi's, the guys who sold the blue jeans, the picks, the pans. Mm-hmm. And this is a good strategy for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Infrastructure. Mm-hmm. They're going to need you. And you don't have to be the guy designing, building. You don't want to be the guy designing and building autonomous automobiles. Because that's going to only, there's going to be a big winner and there are going to be a lot of losers. And you don't want to be there. But back end?
Yeah.
Don't you think Amazon and Google and... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Microsoft.
Microsoft, yep. Azure.
Yep.
How's China doing these days?
How is China
those
doing?
Chinese?
I didn't have a good segue for that.
There was some news this week about China. A couple of pieces of news, Microsoft and China. One is the Chinese, it's called the SAIC, the State Administration for Industry and Commerce. They're the ones who've been investigating Microsoft for antitrust or anti-monopoly charges in China. They came back this week after having been quiet for about a year and said, hey, Microsoft, we need some more information on this antitrust case that we first brought against you in 2014. So we don't really know what the information is they are asking for. I've seen some translations of this saying digital information. Got me. And all Microsoft will say is we're serious about complying with China's laws and we are committed to addressing SAIC's questions and concerns. So we don't really know what is happening in this phase of this investigation, but it's not over. That's all we can probably say.
Yeah, I think this whole thing is a farce. You know, no, I really do. China is very clearly moving toward this place where they have their own technology. They're over-reliant on foreign technology. They hate that. This is the Snowden stuff. And all they can imagine is that Microsoft is in cahoots with the U.S. government to spy on their systems. But on the flip side, what we have is a situation where some vast majority of the computers in China are all running pirated copies of Windows. You know, so it's like this weird, it's like a super big market. We, you know, Microsoft can't ignore it, just like any company can't ignore it. And everyone hates everyone. You know, it's crazy. And by the way, on a complete side note, that SAIC statement that Mary Jo mentioned.
Oh, man. Did you try to translate it?
I did. This is awesome. So I used Google Translate. I have it in my browser. And I translate. And translation is pretty tough. So I said, well, you know, maybe I'll use the Bing Translator because you never know. And I could combine them into one translation that made sense. This is how Bing translated the statement. Kao kun kun kati this monkey copy. That's what it says.
Who's the monkey in that sentence?
I don't know. Wait, it says, "Kao kun kun kati this monkey copy."
Translated into what language?
That's from traditional Chinese into English.
I don't think those are English words except for this. What was this monkey?
Monkey.
Kati, like C-A-T-T-Y.
Kati.
Copy. But kao, like K-H-A-O. Kun kun, K-U-N.
Kao kun kun.
Kao kun kun kati this monkey copy. Yep.
Now we know what it's all about. Yeah.
So I'm like, I guess I'll go with the Google translation.
The Google translator good?
Yeah. Well, yes and no, right? Because the problem with the Google one, let me just look it up, is it's not, it doesn't make sense as sentences. It sort of says, SAIC task force to Microsoft, comma, Microsoft greater China, the person responsible for the anti-monopoly investigation inquiry, comma, asking them to administration, since Microsoft's alleged monopoly on the case to investigate major issues will be described in an electronic data acquisition, and this is all one sentence, by the way, and requested its investigation in a timely manner after asking a complete description of the material submitted. Any questions?
Anybody? Yeah. Well, I think, no, but that you get the gist of it. At least it's better than catty monkey copy.
Catty, cow, 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 kun, kun, catty, monkey copy.
Yeah.
So
I
those
tried
are the
to
two
translate
competing.
It too, and I was like, nope.
I don't even.
How could that?
And by the way, just so we're clear, Microsoft's future is in the cloud.
Catty monkey copy.
You know, I don't know what that means. It's embarrassing.
So this is the Chinese State Administration for Industry and Commerce. And this is, you know, silly.
I really think they just intend to keep Microsoft on tenterhooks for the next 10 years or something. I think this is just part of an ongoing thing where it's xenophobic. It's anti-US technology. It's not just Microsoft.
Oh, it isn't. Qualcomm, Volkswagen, Chrysler have all paid substantial fines. I mean, this is...
They're upset about Windows XP, they got rid of
changed their anti-monopoly laws, China did, and then suddenly everybody was being held up.
It's so funny because they still have no copyright or patent protection for any of this stuff.
No, and the president of China visited the Microsoft campus this past year. A lot of photo ops and all this kind of stuff, and he said he was very open to the internet expanding in China as long as they respected, let me find the exact quote,
catty monkey copy.
Catty monkey. where is it? I can't find it. Oh, it's the national realities of China, meaning we're going to have censorship.
Well, you know,
so all
that.
These U.S. tech companies.
We had that deal with them. Remember the Baidu Windows 10 deal? And then
special version of Windows 10. They did the Windows One launch. I'm sorry, the Xbox One launch in a very special way in China because you have to have state-owned companies that are partnering to have a new joint venture. It's like this crazy situation. Sony had to do the same thing for the PlayStation 4. Everyone is so eager to be there because it's such a huge market, but the constraints are crazy.
Yeah.
It's a very strange place.
So Michael, our son, is in seventh grade, goes to school with a young lady who's a great artist, really nice, talented artist, Bridget. And her parents asked me a year ago, they said, Bridget needs a new computer. What should I get her? And I said, get a Surface because she can draw with it and it would really be great. They got a Lenovo. I think it was Lenovo. And they had endless problems, returned it. She came over last night with her new Surface Pro.
Oh, wow.
And she was drawing with it and she loves it. And it was such a great success story. And I was, you know, because in fact, her brother, who was one of our interns, Chris, actually he's an employee now, bought her a subscription to the Creative Cloud. So she's got Illustrator and she's got Photoshop. And she says, yeah, I'm working on After Effects. I'm really trying to. It's like, and this is all on her, not Surface Pro, I'm sorry. Surface. What's the littler one is the Surface?
Surface 3.
Whatever it was. Anyway, it's not the full Surface Pro. It's the Surface 3. Less expensive, which is fine. She's a seventh grader. And it's great. And she's got the keyboard.
Yeah. Is it raining?
Either that or somebody just got married and the rice is pelting down. Sounds like rice on the roof. Yeah, it's raining. It is pouring. Wow. Which is good. We need it. El Nino has arrived.
Talk about the power of persuasion. I felt like I could just hear it.
Me too.
You know?
Can you hear it? You can't hear it.
I thought I heard it.
Of course you can hear it.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure, but I felt like I could hear it before. Yeah.
You can hear it.
I can hear it.
Listen to the rhythm of the phone.
That's what I'm going to take a nap to that.
It's nice. You should record this and loop it.
I love rain sound.
I don't know. That's just the jungle rain. That's a different one. Different loop. We need the rain. Of course, it's, you know, this is it. Typical. It's like your weather. So I'm coming to New Jersey, and it was 70 degrees.
I know. Yeah. And then it was 20. No,
it was like, boom. 19.
Boom. 19.
Yeah, and you had snow, Paul?
Just a little.
Yeah. Get to the Bahamas. It's like 90 degrees. They're having a heat wave, too. The whole East Coast.
Probably this kind of snow is not worth mentioning. But after last winter, let's say we're all still a little sensitive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yikes. Yes, somebody's saying, will the new Twit Studios have better soundproofing? Yes.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think we'll hear the rain on the roof quite the same.
I don't recall ever hearing it before. Like,
oh, yeah, I hear it every time. Thing is, this is just a, you know, just, we call it the brick house because we don't really want to think about it. But this is just a kind of 100-year-old wood frame building. It could fall over right. any time. And that's
especially with all those damn bricks on the wall.
Like. I know. What finally took it down? Well, somebody kept putting bricks up on the wall.
Some jerk put a bunch of bricks on this one wall.
It was never designed for that kind of weight.
Yep.
So, Surface Book. By the way.
Yes.
By the way, because I'm going away for a week, I shut my Surface Book down. I didn't want to continue to cook all week long.
Right. Smart. Yep.
Booted it up. And it's the same problem. It still is just hot, hot, hot.
Yeah.
It's a little bit funky.
Just a couple of days ago, I finally did. I was kind of hoping Microsoft would just fix this problem already, right?
Yeah.
And it's the new year, so we're due. But just the other day, I did the same. I actually reset everything. Reinstalled, you know, yada, 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 turned hibernation on. And, you know, so it's a little slower coming awake and all that kind of stuff. I can live with that. But, yeah, I guess get the same video flashing issues, same heat. So, you know, it's just.
I want to love this laptop.
I do, too. It really bothers me that it's not fixed.
And I even recommended it to people. But I do have to, you know, our new producer, Jason Cleanthes, said, I need a new laptop. What should I get? I like that Surface Book. And I said, yeah, you know what, Jason, as much as I want to recommend this, get the Dell 13. Get the Dell XPS 13. You know, you should get Touch, Windows 10 and Touch. I said, you don't, he said, well, I like the tablet. You don't want the convertible, really, unless you know you're going to use a tablet. The ability to make a convertible is such a compromise in every other respect that it's not worth it unless you know you're going to use it.
Mary Jo might be interested in this because I know she's still kind of anti-touch. And you know, I think different people, myself included, have sort of made the argument over the years that touch is one of those things. It's kind of nice if you have it. You don't have to use it. It's, you know, whatever. With the new ThinkPads they just came out with this year, Lenovo introduced a transforming version of the ThinkPad, you know, ThinkPad Yoga. And so for the traditional, you know, form factor ThinkPad X1 Carbon, they actually removed the touch option.
So that
machine is now not even available with touch.
What?
Yep. And you know what? Yeah. You know who's going to love that? Businesses.
Yeah, they don't need touch. But they will eventually, you know, this is the thing. It's a little short-sighted because what's going to happen is the same thing as BYOD. People are going to get used to touch in other spheres, like home. Yeah. And then they're going to come to work and it's going to be a hobbling. Because once you get used to, you know, being able to just once, you know, scroll screens or whatever, you still use a key and keyboard and mouse. But every once in a while, you want to reach out and touch that screen, and it will be seen as hobbling. I think.
I thought it was kind of a curious decision, but I wonder if it wasn't to just really push the differentiation with the transforming version.
Well, it also adds expense, right? Touch is expensive.
Yep.
And a little bit of thickness of weight, right?
Yep.
So you can have that really super thin
battery life.
Yep.
Yep.
What about this HP EliteBook Folio, this really thin one?
So that's a business version of a machine they have out right now called the HP Envy Notebook, which is like a MacBook Air type device. This one's even thinner.
This looks like the MacBook.
Lighter. Actually. Like the MacBook, yeah. And it is. It's Core M-based.
2.2 pounds.
Yeah. The one thing I'd say about the HP stuff is it's not super expensive for what it is. There's a 4K version of the Spectre X360.
I know you've always liked HP stuff.
No, it's not that I've always liked it. It's that for the past couple of years, they've really turned it around.
Yeah, maybe that's
And so even case. On the low end, the mid-range, and on the high end with the Elite book, the Spectre, the Envies, those are all really nice machines now. And that wasn't always the case. Three, 4 years ago, these things were MacBook Pro ripoffs and... Yeah. I didn't like that kind of stuff. But they, you know, whatever's happening there, something has gone very right at HP.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Is the spinoff already done or is it?
Yep.
It is.
It's done. Yep.
So the PC division is its own separate unit now. Okay. Well, that actually is probably good free it from the tyranny of the
of the integration.
The integration.
Yeah, because really the printer division is going to shine now that it's not tied to their cloud efforts.
Which it makes a lot of money. I mean, that printer division was the...
It probably does, actually.
Are you kidding?
It's HP's the ultimate version of crapware. It's like the you just ordered ink whether you knew you needed it or not.
Congratulations. Yep. What is this ink keep coming?
What does ink keep arriving in the mail?
Printer's ordering for you.
The HP Ink of the Month Club.
Hey, we didn't mention when we were talking about China. I should have, and I see it in the notes here, I should have mentioned this, that Microsoft was sending out emails to people saying, hey, by the way, China might have hacked your email.
Well, not exactly. So actually, Reuters accused Microsoft of knowing that China hacked their email and didn't tell them. Microsoft says that's not the case.
Okay.
However, they have agreed this past week, I think over Christmas week, to explain to people when they believe it is a state-sponsored hacking attack that's occurred on their account. So that they're actually a bit behind on that one. I think Facebook, Google.
Does Google do that?
Yahoo does,
I guess they do. I'm sorry. I forgot. I didn't mean to head us back to China. But Surface Book coming to 10 new markets in early 2016.
Yep. Well, that's enough about that.
Yep. And the Hub.
I'm actually in the UK especially, and in France and Western Europe and so forth.
You know what? It's all software stuff, right? It will all be fixed.
I really do. Yeah, I really do think so. Although... obviously, with the Wi-Fi issues we saw in Surface Pro 3, there's a little bit of concern that they'll never get this exactly right. But I think the sleep stuff, which is the big issue, the display driver stuff, that's a software issue. That's a driver issue. He says confidently.
Hoping.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Surface Hub, right? What happened there?
Yeah, that's disappointing because I was really – I'm not going to buy one. They're kind of expensive. But I was kind of – I was tempted. Yeah. It'd be fun to have in the studio.
You're probably less tempted.
Yeah, when the price went up, I was like, okay, never mind.
Yeah. So right around Christmas, Microsoft contacted us and said, by the way, remember when we told you what those prices were for Surface Hub? It was supposed to be $7,000 for the 55-inch and $20,000 for the 84. Well, they're actually $2,000 more expensive. That.
And that's enough for me to go, nope, I was thinking about it. No.
They didn't really say why the prices are higher.
Because it costs more to make, right?
But it was, we finalized our manufacturing plan with a view towards delivering the best product experience. Okay. They also
talk about vague,
I know. Yep. And that it originally was supposed to start shipping both the models, I believe, on January 1st, but now it's going to be sometime in the first quarter of 2016. Yeah. So slightly delayed again, also. But they're really coming. They really are.
Businesses probably aren't as price sensitive. I mean, I'm a small business, but businesses spend $20,000 on Cisco conferencing crap in their boardroom. So, it's probably not significant.
I appreciate that. Look, I think with Windows 10 upgrades in businesses, this is not necessarily a time sensitive thing. It's just that I think this was going to ship like September 1st originally, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a second delay. A price hike, and it's a little weird, but we'll see what happens. They have to ship it eventually.
Was Perceptive Pixel selling their screens? They weren't they? I mean, this is a product.
Yeah, I've used one. Microsoft used them.
And this is what they bought
them. They used to bring them to remember this was the screen in Steve Ballmer's office.
It's not like it's something that never was manufactured. I mean, this is a known. Right. Quantity.
But this isn't just a screen, right? This is a new type PC. Of computer. It's designed for collaboration, multiple users.
Okay.
It's the type of thing where multiple Windows people 10. Can walk up to it with pens and write at the same time. And,
Maybe there's
all kinds of stuff going on here. So.
All right. So it's more than the Perceptive Pixel.
Yeah, it's not just a screen.
Okay.
There's also all the parts around it, like stands and, I've heard some people say, I think they're having trouble with some of the mounting of the devices on the stands. Who knows, right? But yeah whatever.
Well,
they got to get that Sharpie just right.
You say that, but Apple, who knows a little bit about manufacturing stuff, cannot get the Apple Pencil in any quantity in stock. And we were talking about it yesterday, Mac Break Weekly. The consensus seems to be the nib is harder to make than they thought. The little rubber tip.
Yeah.
The yields are much lower than they thought. And they had promised to sell a nib kit and stuff, and none of that. Five different nibs.
Yep. Sure. No, I got a nib kit for my Surface Book.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice to
they
have
all
nibs.
Seem to work exactly the same way from what I can tell, but, you know, whatever.
Anyway, you know, it just shows you. I mean, there's no company with more expertise in manufacture than Apple, and, you know.
Yep.
And it's a little the rubber piece. Yeah. That's it.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So it just shows you.
It's only a matter of time before third-party nibs appear.
Right.
Like a pen loop also? Well,
I'm waiting. Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's going to be pen loops. I'm waiting for the third-party Surface Hubs, the $500 knockoff.
Well, I think Microsoft thinks that's going to happen.
Of course it is.
And I think they're encouraging it.
So it's if a platform. I see a single computer maker make a computer that has a giant hole in the middle of the thing when it's closed, come on.
No one's gonna copy the Surface.
No one can copy that.
No.
That's stupid.
The clothespin. Nobody's gonna copy the clothespin. I love my Surface Book. Don't knock it. I love how the pen goes right on the side there like that. Big magnet. I can use it to erase floppy disks. It's great. It's handy.
Have you lost your pen yet?
No, because it sticks pretty nice, and I've been happy.
Oh, okay.
I've been very happy with my. I bought the dock. I haven't used the dock yet, and I kind of feel like maybe I shouldn't have bought the dock. But I don't have room on my desk, and now I have to buy a PC, so I can use my Oculus, my two Oculus Rifts.
You might need two computers. I don't know if you can connect two to one.
Would there
of them.
Be a reason? Maybe.
Would there be a reason of two Oculus Rift?
Yeah.
What's the plural of rift?
Rifti.
Rifts.
Rifts is not right.
Riftbox.
The murder of rifts. What's the collective noun for Oculus Rifts?
Oculi.
Oculi.
Rift.
Oculi Rifti. Yeah. Yeah, it would be kind of fun to have two. You could come over and somebody could rift. You have a rift party.
Right.
Both of you could be in the rift land. The
world. Kids would walk in and be like, look at these idiots. He's like standing there and like turning around like mimes.
You know, I think there's a. I think there might be a new job category for car. Because I learned the other day, 1.5% of all people in the United States are employed as drivers. I mean, these are people who are going to be hurt by the autonomous vehicle movement. But maybe you could drive at home using your Oculus Rift. You could be a virtual driver.
This would suddenly make all those Forza type games for Xbox One actually start to make sense.
See?
You know?
Yeah.
People ask me why I don't play these games, and I said, because I own a car. Because
I drive.
I can go out into the real world.
I have an actual car.
In Massachusetts, it's just like Forza, because everyone drives like an idiot.
Yep.
Let's take a break. We'll have more in just a bit. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking about Microsoft, all the new stuff. We're talking about a little bit about CES, not much. We're all glad not to be in Vegas, frankly. Somebody's telling me that Father Robert, who's been there one day, is already losing his voice. That's exactly why. Yeah, but that's what happens, right? You get
so dry.
The desert air, and everybody smokes in the casinos, and you're talking the whole time. And the thing is, it's a bunch of crap this year. I don't see anything really. Let's be honest, can we?
Yeah.
It isn't. It's increased every year. It's getting more like this, where nobody announces anything important at CES. It wouldn't be a good idea. Hey, let's talk about our sponsor, ZipRecruiter.com. If you're one of the people in your business, maybe you are the person in your business. I was for a long time to do the hiring. Maybe you're the HR person. You know that this is a challenge and opportunity. I hate that kind of, you know, that's business talk. But it's true because, first of all, it's hard to fill a position. And especially, you know, it comes at the worst possible time when you're down a person, right? You need to find a new person. But it's also the most important thing you can do because your company is made up of – it's made of people. So hiring the right person is a big part of making a great company and ultimately of the success of your business. That's why ZipRecruiter is a tool you need to know about to make it easier to hire faster and to get the right person fast. If you go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows – note, by the way, that they also will let you search for a job, but if you're hiring for a job, you could post that job listing, write it once, post it on more than 100 job boards with one click of the mouse. You're going to get, including, by the way, social networks like Twitter and Facebook and Craigslist, you're going to get so many more candidates right away. First of all, the first thing that happens is they match your job opening with nearly 6 million current resumes in their database. So within 24 hours, you would get candidates, great candidates. Now, the thing is, they're not coming to your email box or your phone. They're not ringing your number. They're not emailing you. It all goes right into the ZipRecruiter easy-to-use interface. So it's very simple to go through all of the applicants, screen out the ones that don't meet your needs, rate the rest of them, and hire the right one fast. They make it easy. 400,000 businesses have used ZipRecruiter. You could try it for free right now at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. We got an email from Dan, who's a listener and a ZipRecruiter client. He said, the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is you have to spend extra time recruiting precisely when you're short-staffed, like I said. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster. It lets me manage my candidates in one place. And benefits, too, by the way. Did you see this? They have easy onboarding for new hires. They automate the I-9, the W-4, the custom forms. They make it really easy to hire the person. It's a all-in-one, full stop, all-in-one, one-stop shop for doing your hiring. The most important job you have, yet the most challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. You just try it once. It's free for the first 4 days, and you'll see why we use it and why so many other companies use it. It is just great. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Give it a try right now. Free. And we thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. They make it possible for me to pay a princely sum to Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley for their appearances each and every week on this. Well, all right, maybe not princely. A small stipend.
Should be wearing a crown.
You know, when somebody offers you a stipend, it's going to be cheap. It's going to be like, okay.
Just the word stipend itself.
Stipend itself, yeah. There's a minimal amount of money. The smallest amount we could give you and not really appear
right.
Like
right,
complete,
right.
Complete idiots. Moving along. Xbox.
Funny.
Oh, you want to do mobile apps first? Let's do mobile apps first. Poor Mary Jo. We shouldn't do that to her.
No, we can do mobile apps.
Well, just let's a couple of quick apps. Points on mobile,
okay.
I guess.
Mobile. This is AT&T. The Paul Thurrott section.
Well, some of it. AT&T confirmed over the holiday week that it was, in fact, allowing Microsoft to deliver certain kinds of updates to its customers who have a Lumia 950.
Yay.
I guess
Lumia Thank 950. You, AT&T.
So there have been a lot of assumptions in the wake of this. And in fact, just today, as sort of an add-on to the story, T-Mobile revealed which handsets it will be rolling out the Windows 10 mobile upgrade to. So that actually stands in contrast to this AT&T announcement because – on the one hand, we have AT&T saying certain kinds of updates to certain phones will just be allowed and AT&T will not block them. But on the other hand, we have T-Mobile in Germany saying for existing phones that want the Windows 10 mobile upgrade, you know, carriers have to explicitly allow that to happen, which is the old way of doing things. And so obviously these two situations are related to the types of updates, the size of update, the impact, you know, that it's going to have on the device and so forth. And so the situation is better. It's not 100% clear. And I think what was the someone was asking as we just before we started the show, what if you don't want Windows 10 mobile? Can you say no to it? And the answer is we have no idea because that's never happened before. You know, in the past, you would want any update that you got for Windows Phone, but this is a major OS shift and they never have done a major OS shift upgrade before, right? I think when we went from Windows Phone 7, 5, I guess it was. Or to whatever, they didn't allow the 8.0 upgrade, that you needed a new phone to get that upgrade. So this is a first, and so we're going to have to wait and see how that works. We don't know. So that's interesting.
Huh.
And then just quickly in passing to building rumors that HP is going to be releasing its own Windows Phone handset, probably at Mobile World Congress. I cannot imagine why HP would want to get into this business other than the fact that as a newly reformed just PC and devices type company, it feels like it needs to be in this business. It seems to me like the smarter choice might have been Android for a company like HP, but they are, of course, one of Microsoft's big partners, and maybe that, you know, factors into it. But it's just rumor stage, and so we'll have to wait and see, you know, what they announce, if they announce. And then, I don't know, Mary Jo, you could probably...
Yeah, the Skype Messenger one, I don't think that's still been fixed, but if you've noticed... And you're using Skype Messenger on Windows, that your messages are out of order. That was a known bug that Microsoft acknowledged right around Christmas.
That could that sounds like a trivial thing.
It's not trivial.
But it isn't. It could. I'm thinking now about some scenarios, yeah. And that could really be. But I told you. No, you didn't. I can have the.
Yeah. Yeah. Like your messages were showing up in the bubble above where you were typing them, and then somebody's like, why aren't you answering this, me?
Right.
This has definitely happened to me. So.
Yeah, no, that is actually could be serious.
Yeah. It was annoying. And I'm not sure if it's been fixed. It was a definite annoyance around Christmas. I don't think I noticed it recently, though. So maybe it has been fixed.
Good.
It was only on Windows. The other one is I wanted to just remind people about next week's deadline, January 12th. Microsoft is dropping support for IE 8, 9, and 10, which we've known for a year and a half, by the way, or longer. Maybe they're not going to be delivering any more security updates even for those browsers. So, you know, they've been trying to get consumers off of that, moving to IE 11 and or Edge, depending on what platform you're running. Also, if you are a business and you are running those browsers because you have apps that are built on them, Microsoft's advising you to check out enterprise mode in IE 11 because there's more and more backwards compatibility possibilities there. So just be aware, it's next week. This is the deadline. And
so if the XP expiration was Armageddon, what is this? Where does this factor on the scale?
Yeah. Well, you know, I tweeted this again today, and a lot of people are like, yay, finally they're dropping support for these things because as
Why
a developer.
Why would anyone care? So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Developer, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I only have one.
I think this is going to surprise people. I think there's going to be some issues here.
Yeah. I think because next Tuesday is Patch Tuesday, you'll get an update warning thing from Microsoft that says, hey, by the way, this is
no
longer supported. By the way, like we told you for a while.
Maybe they could start advertising Windows 10 to those people too.
Yeah. But here's how you can get around this.
It's been a while since those were current, right? I mean, this isn't that premature.
Yeah, but you know how this stuff goes. There's got to be millions and millions of people using these things. And what was the last version of IE that worked on Windows XP? Was it 8 or 9 or something? I don't know why anyone would remember that.
Eight.
But it's
got to be 8. It was Windows. It was the IE 8 was the last version.
So there are people, but
10 is one of the IEs that'll be.
This could be an issue for those people who are kind of stuck it out with XP for whatever reason, although I would imagine most of those people hopefully are using Chrome or Firefox by this point.
Yes, Steve Gibson.
And really good antivirus. I don't know. But
yeah.
Why would I think that? Those people have not proven themselves to be particularly smart. They're using an OS that was made 15 years ago.
Feels like anything that goes on the internet should have kind of infinite updates, but
yeah.
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we can talk Xbox.
Oof, finally. No, these finally. Are the two, actually. I think, you know, as bad as the gap between the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 is, Xbox One has done tremendously well for Microsoft, really. I mean, if you just didn't have that one comparison, it would be looking great. But one of the ways that they saw great success last year was to lower prices on the base console, but also to have these bundles. And I don't know how many they have right now, but I want to say going into the holiday season, they had at least half a dozen, if not 8 or 9 different bundles, and they were all kind of reasonably priced. And apparently that worked out so well, they're actually issuing 2 new bundles this week and into the next couple of months. And so one of them is a Tom Clancy Rainbow Six Siege bundle, which is, you know, obviously the Rainbow Six games, $400. And the other one's kind of neat because it's a name your game bundle. And so for $349, it's a 500 gig version of the console. And you can pick from a list of games and get a digital download. You know, so Forza, Rise of Tomb Raider, Gears of War Ultimate Edition, or Rare Replay. And so, you know, $349 is like the base price of the console. So you're basically getting that game for free. And these are pretty much worldwide, both of those. So that's kind of cool. This is another one. It's not necessarily awesome, big news, but Microsoft has started talking up the games they're going to release this year. First party games, meaning Microsoft Studio type games, for Xbox and for Windows 10. And I'm kind of more interested in the Windows 10 part of it because I'm always looking to see whether Microsoft is finally going to bring real Halo to Windows 10 or whatever. And there's no sign of that, but Gears of War Ultimate Edition is coming to Windows 10 in spring 2016. And then we're going to get a Gears of War 4 multiplayer beta for Xbox One in spring 2016. And then the actual game comes out next year. And so this is kind of a short list of that stuff. But I think the big thing here is the Windows 10 stuff and the fact that these are AAA titles for the most part. You know, again, sort of like that Rise of Tomb Raider thing I was talking about earlier. Nice to see some actual AAA titles kind of show up from Microsoft in this case. On Windows 10, which, you know, I think Microsoft in particular has ignored Windows gaming for many years. And so that's pretty good news right there.
Right.
I think that's pretty much it. That wasn't too bad.
Jo is still awake.
I am. I tried to keep it short. Now.
Yes. And so,
all I ask of you is that you show the same restraint.
Brevity.
Restraint. I will.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the segment we like to think of as Mary Jo's Revenge.
Dun, 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 dun.
Server time!
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple of interesting new tidbits for server fans out there. Microsoft made available on MSDN this week something that's called Microsoft R Server. They made it available for MSDN subscribers to download and also for DreamSpark subscribers to download. And what I think this is, because there's no blog post or anything from Microsoft saying what this is, I think it's just the renamed version of the commercial distributions of the Revolution Analytics R products that Microsoft acquired last year. So R, Paul asked me today, what is R? R is a programming language for computational statistics. And it's a really big deal for people who are into big data analytics. There's Microsoft R Server for Hadoop. We have to say Hadoop. It's a new year. For Teradata, for Red Hat Linux, SUSE, for Windows. There's all these different distributions that are now available to you. And it's all part of that acquisition that Microsoft made last year when they bought Revolution Analytics. And Revolution Analytics is a maker of one of the many distributions of the R programming language. So if you are into R, go and check out.
What is R? R is I want to say a systems
like pirate language of some kind.
R. I want to say it's a systems language, kind of right. It's kind of a scripting language used heavily for systems programming, or
yeah, statistical computing and predictive analytics is what people always talk about. Okay. Yep.
That's right. I'm thinking of something else, maybe Rust.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's R is actually the language that followed on to S, even though S follows R in the alphabet.
Maybe they're going backwards.
Lord.
Let's just keep it really confusing.
It's kind of a reverse Polish.
Can we talk about cats in Call of Duty now, please?
Oh, wait till. Okay, here's even a better one. Yes. Paul liked this even more. Yes. Biz Talk is the other thing I want to talk about.
Biz Talk.
Oh, you were being funny. You weren't being serious.
Biz Talk server. BizTalk Server is Microsoft's enterprise integration server product. And we've been wondering, would there be another version of BizTalk? Yes, there will, if you were wondering. Q4 2016, Microsoft's going to have a new version of BizTalk Server, and they're going to have previews of it before that this year. And how do we know this? They posted a roadmap, unbelievable, over the holidays, a BizTalk roadmap. And it also, in this roadmap, unbelievable. In this roadmap, it also talks about BizTalk services, which are the Azure services version of some of the BizTalk capabilities. So if you want to integrate things like Salesforce.com, Office 365, and kind of pull these things together through the cloud using BizTalk adapters, this also is coming this year. This is on this roadmap as well. If you want to see the whole roadmap, I've got it on my website. So BizTalk lives. BizTalk lives on. I bet everybody was excited to hear that.
BizTalk.
You know, BizTalk is one of those products that people kind of laugh about, but it's a huge moneymaker for Microsoft. There's hundreds or thousands of users of it in the world, probably thousands, multiple thousands. And it's something that if you're an enterprise, you care a lot about because you need a way to integrate all these different services and servers in a way that's more programmatic. So that's why BizTalk matters, Paul Thurrott.
I'm sure Paul is much relieved.
He's asleep now, but he shouldn't be.
I just remember the word orchestrate. That's what I think of when I think of BizTalk.
Anything else?
No, that's all for servers.
All right.
I would like to do an ad, and then we'll do your picks and tips and beer and all that stuff. How about that?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your presence on the web known. Everyone should have a website. I'm a firm believer in that. And you might say, well, no, I don't need a website. I've got Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, no. And especially if you're a business, you need a place that people can go to, preferably with a domain name that kind of says, you know, this is what we do. I don't care if you're a window washer, a plumber, if you're selling knickknacks, embroidered hand towels, you need to have a website. That's how people expect to interact with you. And not, by the way, an ugly site, a site that reflects your aesthetics, your design, your style, and you can do it yourself. You know, I think a lot of people go out and they hire some kid or some consultant to do their website, and it's such a mistake. Because you lose control of it, that person may register the domain name and keep it in their name, and then you don't have access to it, and they can hold you hostage, or they just disappear. And you're left holding the bag. Not at Squarespace. You do it because you can. It's simple. It's trivial. You start with a gorgeous template. You drag in social media. If you want e-commerce, it's all built in. And these templates are state-of-the-art. They're what we call mobile responsive. They look good no matter what size screen. That's really important right now. It used to be you'd have a separate site for mobile and a separate site for desktop. No, nobody does that anymore. That's a bad idea. You want to have a site that looks great and is the same site no matter how your customers, your readers, your fans use it. And I just say fans because a lot of musicians and bands use Squarespace. They've got templates just for bands and restaurants. Having a baby, make a Squarespace site. Getting married, make a Squarespace site. Life events are great on Squarespace. And it's so easy, and it's free for the first 2 weeks. You can really get a sense of it. You don't even give them a credit card. You just sign up, press the Get Started button, and you're making a site, a gorgeous site. The cover pages for a lot of people are all you need. If you go to leoville.com, that's my site, I use the cover pages to make, I think, just a really great kind of slideshow of pictures of me and what I do. And it's a great, and then it has links here to my PGP key, my Facebook, my Instagram, my YouTube. So it's like your calling card on the web. It's so easy to do. So easy to do. And Squarespace's prices are very affordable. And if you want to do more, you can geek out hundreds of customizable settings, fonts, colors, page configurations. Every Squarespace site is unique, is your style, your site. And watch, I'll take this, if you're watching the video, I'm going to take the Leoville site and I'll shrink the page and you'll see it's designed to shrink automatically. In fact, they do some really interesting stuff. For instance, they kind of center the pictures. They pick a part of the picture that actually has the content I want to show in it, which is kind of, they're very clever. I really like Squarespace. I think you will too. So try it free for 2 weeks, squarespace.com. If you decide you want to buy, very simple. Use the offer code Windows. You'll get 10% off for your first purchase. It's just, I love Squarespace. You will too. For a business, for a personal blog, for anybody who, you got to have a presence on the web. By the way, when you subscribe for a year, not only do you get the big discount, but you also get a free domain name, which you also should have. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. And we thank Squarespace. We've been there with them since practically the beginning. Now you hear them on a lot of shows, and you hear them all over. You saw them in the Super Bowl last year, probably be on the Super Bowl again this year. But we were there in the very beginning. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, time for Paul and his tip of the week.
I have numerous tips this week. Back in October, October, I think, Microsoft announced iHeartRadio integration with Groove. And typically when they do something like this and they explain how it works, I kind of put it together on my PC and I take screenshots of it. I couldn't figure out how it works. So at the time, I just said, well, here's what they said. You know, maybe it's something that comes online over time. And I actually never figured it out. And so over the Christmas holiday, at some point, I saw something about it somewhere. And I said, you know what? I'm going to figure this out. And actually, as it turns out, you have to meet very specific conditions to ever see iHeartRadio from within Groove. First, you have to have a Microsoft account. So you have to have signed into the app with your Microsoft account. And second, that account cannot have a Groove Music Pass. If it does, you're not going to see the iHeartRadio integration. And so the reason it's there is to give people who don't have a Music Pass a way to have a real radio-style experience. Because without it, you only get, you know, song snippets or whatever. And so I have an article about this if for some reason you want to use this. But honestly, iHeartRadio works best as a standalone app. And so if you want to use iHeartRadio for radio, which is not a bad option, just run the app because you can make radio stations based on all kinds of criteria, not just on artists, which is how it works through Groove. So I finally figured it out. It only took me 3 months. So enjoy that if you need it for some reason.
By the way,
yep.
iHeartRadio also has the Tech Guy, my radio show, in there, and probably doesn't show up in Groove. So yeah, the app will be the better.
The app is way better than I mean, you're going to end up in the app anyway. I mean, the reason you would use it from Groove is you like some kind of an artist, and you're like, well, I'd like to hear music like this, but from other artists, and you can start the radio station from there. But actually, if you go into the iHeartRadio app itself, there's a lot more going on there, and so it's kind of a better option.
Cool.
A little news item from late 2015, Microsoft reneged on its OneDrive unlimited storage commitment.
Oh, I heard about that.
That story.
Yeah,
we didn't really cover it too much. In case you missed it, so that happened. But you may recall later on they came back and they said, okay, so if you guys were using the camera discount or if you were just using that 15 gigs of free space, and you know, previously 7, and if you want that back, we're going to give you a way to do it. That way is available now if you haven't seen it. You want to go to preview.onedrive.com/bonus. And you click on a button that says keep your free storage. And that will give you up to 30 gigs of free storage on OneDrive forever. And so remember, the original kind of setback was that they were going down to 5 gigs. And so if you did have the 15 gigs from before, you didn't have to be using it. You just had it. And or you also took advantage of the 15 gigabyte camera roll bonus, which means you installed OneDrive on a mobile phone and set it up to back up your photos. Could be iOS, could be Android, could be Windows Phone. You will get either 15 or 30 gigabytes of storage now as your default in OneDrive. So this is a no-brainer. You got to do this. Just do it. So preview.onedrive.com/bonus. And then just a quick reminder is kind of a quick tippy thing because I always talk about this. It's the beginning of January. That means there are new games with gold. So if you have an Xbox 360 or better yet, an Xbox One, because you get all the games on Xbox One, head over to the store on the console or the Xbox.com website and see what they are. There aren't any games I'm super interested in this month personally, but Killer Instinct is in there. Dirt Showdown, which is a racing game. There's some good stuff in there, you know, depending on the types of things you like to play. And let's see, what else do I got here? It's kind of multiple apps. I'm thinking about changing the way I do software picks because, of course, you know, now Microsoft makes apps everywhere. What I would like, preferably, is to be able to recommend apps that work across platforms, preferably across all platforms. That's not always the case. But this past couple weeks or so, sometime in the past week or 10 days, whatever, Microsoft released a new app on iOS for some reason only, Microsoft Selfie. And I'm sure they called it Microsoft Selfie because any trendy kid that owns an iPhone sees the word Microsoft and immediately wants to download it. but it's a little bit like the Lumia selfie app that Microsoft, or actually Nokia, released first on Windows Phone. I don't know why it's not on Android. I suppose it will be, but I just wanted to throw a bone out to the people on other platforms. So if you have Windows Phone, iOS, or Android, I've made this recommendation in the past. I use the Pocket Cast apps. You do have to pay for it. It's a podcast app. I love it. I use it every single day. Cross-platform, you can get it on the web as well. It's great.
Yep.
And this, for Android fans, Microsoft makes some great things that you can get that really transform an Android phone into kind of a Microsoft phone. And if you're kind of thinking about switching platforms.
Really? You think there's a high demand for that?
I think there is a high demand for that within the community of people listening to this podcast. Yes.
Oh, okay, good. There you go.
In other words, you have been using Windows Phone, and you kind of see that the end is near, and you're kind of tired of the
switching
situation.
To Android.
Yes. Not in the opposite.
It makes your Android more like a Windows Phone.
Yes. I'm not an insane person, Leo.
Okay.
So one of those things is Microsoft Next Lock Screen. It's one of a couple of lock screen replacements that Microsoft makes. This one's awesome. It's a really, really cool lock screen. It has different settings for when you're at work or home or out on the road and all that kind of stuff. It's neat. In many ways, the more exciting one, though, is the Arrow Launcher. And this completely changes the whole home screen experience on Android. And it puts your most used apps up front, and they have different views for recents and so forth. It's really great. And this one, I didn't put this in the notes, but just in beta right now, and it's constantly evolving. Microsoft is also porting Cortana, of course, to iOS and Android. And on Android in particular, it should, not now, but it should in the future be pretty sophisticated and should be something that could even replace Google Now, if that's the kind of thing you want to do on Android. So it is possible on Android today to have a pretty awesome Microsoft experience, not just the apps, but you know, kind of replace the whole Android, a lot of the Android experience. I mean, obviously phone and texting and so forth, those are going to remain whatever the Android stuff is. But you can replace a lot of it now and put Microsoft stuff in its place.
I have to, is there one place you could go to see all of that?
There is. Microsoft has an app on Android called the Microsoft Apps app.
Oh, that's a good, so it's like a little store within.
It is a store within a store.
I'll install that, yeah.
Or a store within your Android phone anyway. Huh. You can also, you know, if you visit the app stores on the web, if you go to the iTunes store on the web or you go to the Google Play store on the web and you find any Microsoft app, you could search for like Microsoft Word. You click on the name of the company that makes it, and then you'll pretty much see all the apps. Right. It's not actually all the apps because some apps like Skype are listed as a different publisher for some reason, but it's you can see most of the apps that way. But on Android, they do make an app that shows you all the apps, which is kind of a neat little idea.
Yeah. Arrow Launcher. Do you use Arrow Launcher?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I really like it a lot. And they have, I think there's three default panels, but you can actually add some other ones. And so they have, it's sort of based around the notion of promoting the stuff you use the most. It's not just apps. It's like the people that you communicate with will also show up
simplifies the UI. The reviews are very strong on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete overhaul of the UI, so if you're kind of into Android, you might not be that interested in it. But and it's not like it turns it into Windows
Phone. It doesn't
phone.
Look That's like really there's no tiles or anything. It doesn't look like
Windows Phone. No, it's not that. It's kind of a new way of thinking about the phone. You know, we use phones. We know how they work. We run apps. We talk to people or we communicate with people. How do we make that more efficient?
Right.
Kind of a new way to
it's
do it.
It's a garage project. Interesting.
Yeah. Yep. That's good. It's really nice.
Thank you. I'm now downloading it and I'll install it. Meanwhile, Mary Jo.
But now you're going to complain when it doesn't work.
Oh, Paul, you told me to use this thing. You ruined my whole life. That's okay. It won't brick the phone, will it?
Probably not.
No.
Oh, God.
Not again. Not likely. Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley. Yeah.
Enterprise Pick is a free ebook about moms. Moms isn't what you think it is. It's Microsoft Operations Management.
You got my attention, I must say.
Yes, this is a different mom's. Microsoft Operations Management Suite. And what that is a collection of Azure services, including Operational Insights, Azure Automation, Azure Site Recovery, and Azure Backup, all put together into a suite. It's something Microsoft introduced last year at Ignite, and they haven't really talked a whole lot about it. But there's this new free ebook. It's free because it's still in preview at this point. And it has a very deep dive on what's in MOMS and how you can use it. All kinds of things like alert management and backup and disaster recovery, how to analyze network data. And what's kind of cool is this was written by three Microsoft MVPs plus another guy from Microsoft who's a principal platform engineer, I believe. It's hard for me to tell you how to find this book. I've tried to think of a way to make it easy to find, but I would say in the show notes for Windows Weekly is going to be the best way. It's available in gallery.technet.microsoft.com, but then beyond that, it's a little bit hard to search for. But if you want to find it that way, just look for Microsoft Operations Management Suite and see if you can find it that way. And if you can't find it, just tweet to me and I'll send you the full link for it. But it's free. So if you want to learn about moms, get it. Get it while it's free.
I love my moms. and your code name pick of the week.
This is a very interesting and mysterious code name, and I'm hoping some listeners might help me figure out more about this thing. The code name is Beihai, B-E-I-H-A-I, which is a city in China. Beihai is going to be a new consumer-focused app coming from a new business unit at Microsoft that's called Windows App Studio.
Interesting.
So if you remember back around the fall when Terry Myerson announced a reorg inside of his organization, he promoted someone whose name is Kudo Tsunoda. I'm really hacking his name there, but he was the guy who was the creative director of Kinect and later worked on a bunch of Xbox projects. He gave him a new job to run this thing called Windows App Studio. And Windows App Studio isn't making games. They're making productivity apps and other kinds of apps that are consumer-focused, but they're going to run across all these different Windows 10 form factors, including the HoloLens, Windows PCs, tablets, maybe the phone as well. So he's developing this app, codenamed Beihai, and that's about all we know. We don't know anything more about it at this point. We have the code name. We have which division it is. They're advertising quite a bit for it in the Microsoft Jobs site. There are a lot of listings where at the bottom it says Beihai. And that's it. We can't find anything else on it. So if anybody out there is listening has some clues, we're all ears to find out more about this mysterious new app that's coming. And that's the code name.
Does that work when you, like, say, you got any leaks?
Yep, sometimes that helps. People might drop a little hint. Maybe not the whole thing, but something more.
Hi, this is Chris C. I work at Microsoft. And I just want to let you know what Baha'i is all about. Protect my identity.
You know what's really funny? You want to hear a funny story about tipsters from Microsoft? So yeah. Back in the day, I had a guy who worked for Microsoft who used to tip me a lot. And he used to always go to a payphone and call me because he was so paranoid they were chasing
his calls. That is so awesome.
Of course, and, that dates it because I don't think there are payphones anywhere anymore.
I know.
Well, a couple of years ago, like I used to have guys email me from Gmail, right? Because it's like, I'm on Gmail, I'll be safe.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's how it works.
What could be wrong with that? Yep. Well, and now they're turning all the payphones in New York City into Wi-Fi snooping spots. I'm sorry, hotspots.
Yeah,
so. Wi-Fi is that what you said?
Snooping spots. Yeah. Well, there's some thought in the community that maybe they'll be paying attention to what you're doing on their Wi-Fi.
Perhaps.
Let's not think about that. Let's think about beer.
Let's think about beer.
Yep.
Much better. Yeah. Pay no attention to that privacy violation. Let's drink.
Yeah, so this week's beer pick is a bourbon barrel beer.
Mm-hmm. It's love those.
Founders Brewing. It's called Project Pam. And so what's really interesting about this beer is it's a different take on how to make a bourbon barrel beer. They took a black IPA that they made, and then they aged it in maple bourbon barrels. So it tastes a little like maple and a little like bourbon, and not a whole lot like an IPA, but you can still taste some of the hops. And this beer came highly recommended from a friend of Paul's and mine, Chris Woodruff, who listens to Windows Weekly every week, and he lives near Founders. And he said, if you can find this, you're going to love this beer. It's amazing. And I have to agree, Chris, it is really amazing. So if you see a bottle of this, give it a try if you're interested in bourbon barrel.
Is it typical that these bourbon barrel beers be very, very expensive? There's one at our grocery store, Petaluma Market, which is a great beer selection.
They're usually pretty pricey. It's like
really pricey.
Yeah. They usually make them in small quantities and they have to age them for a number of years.
Oh, and they're heavily aged, yeah.
They are. So But they're totally worth it. If you like beer and you like bourbon, you might like them together.
I do. I love them.
But often beer is made is not the right word, but beer that is combined with bourbon barrels seems to work out really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Like that combination,
It's a nice combination.
What do they do? Store it in the barrel? How does that work? They don't really make it in the barrels, right? Because you have to make beer in these
barrels. They age it in the barrels, right?
After they make it, they put it into a bourbon barrel and sometimes into multiple kinds of barrels like cognac and bourbon or something crazy, red wine barrels.
There's no bourbon or cognac in it, but the barrel staves have infused with this flavor.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
It's funny because you don't usually think of beer as being aged. You usually think of beer as the fresher, the better.
These kind of beers.
An American beer company mistake advertising thing.
Really?
You know, fresh.
Well,
fresh
it depends
dated,
on the style.
You know.
The style.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like IPAs, you usually want them fresh.
Yeah.
Because you want the
light.
Hops.
That explains what I just said. Nobody wants IPAs.
But if you want
grudgingly
the,
understand.
You know, kind of mellow, have a mellower taste. You know, some beers, including some lambic beers, you can hold them for years, even multiple decades, and they improve with age.
Well that's because they're higher alcohol, right?
And I think also the way they're made and the types of yeast probably in the case of lambics, I would think.
So one thing that might have been worth going to CES for, chat room's reminding me, is this Pico Brew. This little brewery in a box. Yep. It's kind of like it's about the size of a 3D printer, but instead it makes beer. And apparently it's quite the thing at CES. It's got a heavy presence at CES.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to be all over this.
I don't know. You know, you live near Rattle and Hum. Why would you make your own?
Plus, you know, to me, these things are like bread machines.
They're like bread machines. They're exactly like bread machines.
Right? Like, it takes the fun part of brewing out of brewing to me, but...
You still brew, right?
I haven't in a while, but I need to go back and do some. It's been cold enough finally to do it.
Yeah.
So when you're doing your own brewing... It's not that you're making beer that's not to save money, obviously. And it's not that you're making beer that's better than the beer that you can go down and Rattle and Hum and get.
No, not really.
So it's just the satisfaction. It's like cooking your own meal. It's just satisfying.
It teaches you a lot about beer, just learning how to make it.
I think everybody who is a beer lover and a connoisseur of beer should do it once, just so you understand.
Yeah.
Yep.
It just seems like a lot of work, frankly.
It is a lot of work.
I mean,
but it's fun brewing.
And it takes a long time. Well, and then and this takes all the fun and the work out of it. And that's the point is, I don't understand.
You
can go,
you
if you want something, you could just go buy it. It's like, and you're not really learning the process because it's doing all the work.
I know. In home brewing, sometimes you get to try unique ingredients in beers if you're somebody who likes to kind of tinker with it. Like
Russell loves to do that. I mean, Russell makes
he's
really
great at it.
And he has spent tens of thousands of dollars on his equipment.
His beer tastes as good as anything professional you can buy.
Oh, yeah. He's made a plenty.
I have a friend who makes beer that is just like, is the same thing. It's some of the best beer I've ever had.
Yeah. So then, you know, I guess
garage,
at that level...
Right.
Now you're a chef. You're a master cook, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This guy's won awards. You know, he's regionally and in Boston, and he's always one of the things they do for the awards is like you have to duplicate styles, and you have to make them to the tradition of the style. But then he goes off and does his own things as well. It's awesome.
Yeah. That would be fun. That would be a good hobby. If I were really into beer, I would probably be doing that.
Yeah, that would be fun, right?
Yeah.
All right, kids. You're released. You can go. School's over. You can go home.
Welcome home.
Walk
all of your adventures from afar.
Yep.
Oh, it was fun. It was really fun. It was wild. It was a very. I hate a 1 week vacation. That's just not enough. Yeah. But we packed so much into those 7 days that I did feel like I was gone for a long time, even though it was just 7 days. I feel very refreshed and.
Yeah.
It was nice to be back, though. I missed you guys and missed doing the show. So here I am.
Yeah, you look like you missed us.
Not at all. Wednesday
you
came along.
Really remorseful the whole time.
I didn't think, gosh, I just...
Why am I not behind a microphone?
Yeah, why am I on the beach in the Bahamas and kissing dolphins when I could be talking to Paul and Mary Jo? That was New Year's Eve? No, it was the day before New Year's. Yeah, Eve. That was the day I was in the Bahamas. Yeah, Wednesday.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
nice.
Very, very pleasant. Paul and Mary Jo are here every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC. If you want to watch live, we'd love it if you do. Chat room is always a big part of the show. But if you can't be here live, we make on-demand audio and video. Yes, you can watch available after the fact. twit.tv/ww is the website. But, you know, it's a podcast, so that means... Pocket Casts, Paul mentioned. You can get it there. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Groove. You can get it on the podcast app on your Windows phone or your Android device or anywhere. Stitcher, Roku. There are four Apple TV apps now. I mean, it's just everywhere. The key is to subscribe so you don't miss an episode because they're always great. And you never know, you know, when a Chris Cappicella is going to show up. Never again, but you never know. So do tune in. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. And that's a great place to keep up on all of his articles and his tips. Lots of good, useful stuff all the time. Mary Jo Foley gets the scoops. She's the queen of that. You can follow her on Twitter, but you can also read her columns at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Actually, you should follow both of them on Twitter. And if you've got scoops, you should leak them.
Yes.
Thanks.
That would be the requirement.
Excellent.
Yeah. I see you're having fun with Brad Sams. Is he? He's at CES, yeah.
Yeah, I fooled him into going. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go.
That's like Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown. That's just cold.
It's really the only reason I brought him into the company.
Yeah,
so
I'll be
we
there.
Can make that happen.
I'll see you down there. Let's. We'll all have. We'll have dinner at.
I sort of was begrudgingly going to go, and then it.
Were you?
I don't think you need to go.
I don't think you need to go. And the thing is, the coverage now, including our own, is so in depth and thorough. Yeah. We have specials every day. We do live feeds.
I get pre-briefed on stuff that I care about, and a lot of it is just not important for to be there.
It's important.
I feel bad for the people over there. You can tell people trying to drum up excitement, and it's like it's just not that interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Okay. Thank you so much for your attention, and we will see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.